I have a short talk today, and it's about a story that many of you are familiar with, 1 Samuel chapter 17, the story of David and Goliath. Goliath was a big guy, but this is going to be a small talk. I probably will approach it a little differently than you've heard in the past, but I hope that you find it helpful. In the fall of 1972, a great battle took place. Some of you are too young to remember this. It happened on sheets of ice across Canada and in the Soviet Union. The combatants weren't soldiers, but hockey players. To some, it might have looked like a friendly international hockey tournament. But for many Canadians, fans of hockey or not, this was more than just a sporting event. This was more than just a chance to achieve bragging rights about whose hockey program was the best. It was about two contrasting ways of life. Western democracy versus Soviet communism. Winning on ice would prove something about which of these ways was better. And these hockey players would somehow settle this for the nations they represented. How's that for pressure? Do you remember this? I was a student in college. I was oblivious to this summit game. I was a bit of a bookworm in those days. But I can remember sitting in a classroom and late in the afternoon hearing sound abrupt from the floor on top of me. It was the men's dorm. And apparently they were watching the game when Paul Henderson scored his famous goal. I remember the moment. Well, in 1 Samuel 17, there's a similar drama unfolding. Now, there's nearly 60 verses in this chapter, and I'm wondering if you would permit me to just summarize a few of these ideas. When the passage opens, people are waiting. Listen to what they're waiting for. Verse 1. Now, the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Soko in Judah. I think we have a map, and maybe you'll be able to see some of these places in the middle. They pitched their camp at Ephes Damim between Soka and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another with the valley between them. Okay, so we have these two high points here, Azekah and Soka. These were both hilltops. And in between there was a corridor, a strategic corridor that connected the Phoenician plains over here where the Philistines lived. And on the other end, it opened up to the hill country of Judah. And so it was a pretty strategic place. If you wanted to control and possess the land, that would be a corridor that would be really nice to have at your disposal. And that's what this was all about. But not much is happening yet. They're waiting. What are they waiting for? What are they waiting for? They're waiting for a fight to break out. But so far, that hadn't happened. Why hadn't the fight begun? Why hadn't Israel gone after the Philistines? Well, we don't have to read very far before we find the reason. Verse 4. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. That's about 9.5 feet. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. That's about 125 pounds. So next time you think your winter coat is a little heavy, it's nothing like what Goliath had to carry around. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point, just the point, weighed 600 shekels, which was about 15 pounds. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man, and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Well, no battle had broken out yet. Far as I can tell, it's because the Israelites were suffering from a bad case of Goliath phobia. For how long? Well, verse 16. For 40 days the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. This went on day after day after day. And their fear threshold just rose and rose. I don't know when the last time was we felt dismayed and terrified. Have you ever felt dismayed and terrified? Well, it's worse when there's a group of people who feel it and not just you all by yourself. It's like the armies of Israel were frozen, unable to move a muscle. Why? Why couldn't they act? Why couldn't they engage? Hadn't the Lord said that he would be with them in battle? Hadn't he? Hadn't he said that when they went out to fight, that he would fight with them and he would fight for them? But they're not doing anything. They're just standing there. Why didn't they engage the enemy? It seems like it was a case of too little faith and too much fear. Too little faith and too much fear. Now, is that something we can relate to? Too little faith, too much fear. Fear. Do you know fear? Do you know the kind of fear that distracts us? Anxiety. Do you know the kind of anxiety that paralyzes us? Intimidation. Do you ever feel intimidated? The kind of intimidation that makes you want to run and take cover? Is it any wonder that the phrase, fear not, appears over and over and over again in the Bible? And do you know that Joseph, Mary, and Zacharias each had their own personal fear not in the Advent story? They did. And I'm wondering if this Advent, if any of us need our own personal fear not. There's sure enough in the scriptures to go around. We all are fearful creatures. We tremble a lot. When do we tremble? Usually when no one's looking. Sometimes in the middle of the night. Sometimes when we're home all alone. We tremble. We're human. We get good and scared several times a day. Why? Well, I think it's because the same bug that bit the Israelite bites us. Goliath phobia. People and situations, whether real or imagined, that threaten our sense of calm and safety. A couple of years ago when I was staying at the Nordby's, when I was commuting from Edmonton, I remember this plaque that they had in the basement. I don't know if they think anybody reads those, but I do. And the plaque said something like, "Do you realize most of the things we worry about never happen?" And that's kind of good to know. That kind of puts your fear in its place. Most of the things we are anxious about never actually happen. Well, I'm pretty sure that if we had been there with the Israelites that day, overlooking the Valley of Elah, our knees would have been knocking together with theirs in perfect three-part harmony. But now, enter David, a young man who seemed immune to Goliathphobia. Here was a guy who was cut from a different bolt of cloth. He wasn't like the others. There's a few pieces here that I think help us to understand David. One of the things that we notice about David is that he decides to join in the fight. Nobody else wants the fight. They're all there. They've got their swords. They've got their shields. They've got their weaponry. But none of them are prepared to engage Goliath. And here comes this, you might think, under-equipped shepherd, boy, young man, whatever his age was, and he decides to join in the fight. I've always been intrigued by this. Nothing was able to move the Israelites off the dime, but David, it seemed, was roaring to go. Why was this? What was different about David? Well, let me suggest a number of things that I think reveal his motivation. First of all, there was this matter of honor. He had a sense of honor, not for himself, but for God. When Goliath was trash-talking the armies of Israel, he was actually trash-talking the God of the armies of Israel. And in David's books, if you mock his God, you have crossed a line. It is now time to suit up. David was one of these people who believed in defending the honor of his God. Have you ever been with somebody who decided they wanted to defend your honor? It's usually not very complimentary if you defend your own honor. But it's kind of neat when somebody else will step up and they will defend your honor. David was that sort of guy. Goliath said some things that in his mind crossed the line. And so now he was prepared to do something about it. Another reason, I think, that reveals David's motivation in engaging the enemy is what I would call the matter of memories. David was not remiss in taking the odd walk down memory lane. He could go back to earlier times in his life and recall when God was there in powerful ways, when God helped him, when God fought for him. And when he recalled how God had enabled him to overcome past foes, it emboldened him to believe that, you know what, if it happened then, I'll bet it could happen again. Look at verse 34. Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And whenever a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock, I went after it and struck it down, rescuing the lamb from its mouth. If it turned against me, I would catch it by the jaw, strike it down, and kill it. Your servant has killed both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, since he has defied the armies of the living God. David said, the Lord who saved me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will save me from the hand of the Philistine. As he thought about the past, he realized that God had been with him, God had fought for him, and if he had done it then I'll bet he could do it again. And that inspired him to engage the enemy. And then finally, there was the matter of mission. You always find mission in the Bible. I mean, it's everywhere. This time, of course, it's not the mission of David, and it's not the mission of Israel, it's the mission of God. If David and Goliath went toe-to-toe and David won, okay, let's just suppose that was the outcome, what difference would it make? As far as David was concerned, it would advance the God cause, and that got him pretty excited. So in verse 46 we read, and I hope there aren't too many young children here, because, boy, this is gritty stuff. David says, this very day the Lord will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you down, he says, and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the Philistine army this very day to the birds of the air and to the wild animals of the earth. Why? So that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not save by sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give it. He will give you into our hands. So if I follow his logic here, he's saying something like, defeat Goliath, and God's fame goes viral. Defeat Goliath, and word would get out that Israel's God wins battles without conventional weapons. That's sure to get people's attention, wouldn't you think? Got me wondering about our style of engagement. Do we engage with those around us who resist belief in God? Do we? This time of year, do we engage with those who resist belief in God? And if we were, how would we do that? With what kind of weapons would we seek to engage them? Would it be with our greater intellect? Some can do that, others can't. Is it with better arguments? Some, again, can do that, but others cannot. Without denying that there is a time for these, what if our stone and sling were things readily available to all? Let me explain. I know some of you have seen the Hobbit movies. In the first Hobbit movie, there's a scene in which Gandalf the Wise is asked why a hobbit had been chosen to defeat the great evil in Middle-earth. Just a hobbit. Like, you know, hobbits are just these little people. Like, if you want someone to till your garden, well, great, go hire a hobbit. But if you want to deal with a serious problem, you need to go get somebody who's big and tough and strong. And so Gandalf, this wise man, says, why has a hobbit been chosen to defeat the great evil? His reply is worth pondering. He says, well, some say only great power can hold evil in check, like Goliath-sized evil. I have found it is the small things, the everyday deeds of ordinary folk that keeps the darkness at bay, simple acts of kindness and love. I think Gandalf is on to something here. This sounds a lot like something that Paul said in one of his letters. Remember when he was describing the weaponry of Christians in Ephesians chapter 6? That sounds a lot like that. Let me read this to you again. While some say only great power can hold evil in check, I have found it is the small things, Everyday deeds of ordinary folk that keep the darkness at bay. Simple acts of kindness and love. I like that. I like that for two reasons. Number one, because like it's the sort of thing that we all can do. We all can engage in. I can do this. You don't have to go take another seminar, another course, get another degree. This is the kind of stuff that anybody can do. And I forget what the other reason was already. But what if folks like you and I, what if we were to engage the people that come across our path over the Advent season? What if we were to engage them like that and with weapons like that? Would that be doable? Is this something that you could do? Is this something that you might do? Truth be told, Balmoral folks have been doing this for almost a century, and it seems to have worked quite well. Well, more could be said about it, but we do need to get our kids in here soon. So let me close by simply saying, this is not a children's story. I always marvel at how we have taken some of the most graphic and PG-13 or maybe 14 passages in the Bible, like Noah's Ark, which is just one of the most gruesome stories when you really think about it. And we have turned these into children's stories. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't teach them to children. It's that first, as adults, we need to have absorbed the message of these stories and then find ways of passing it on to our kids. But this story, as I read it, is a reminder that courage is necessary to please God. You really need to have courage. It's necessary. And when we put ourselves out there for the God cause, whether at Advent or any other time of the year, the amazing thing is we discover that we're not alone, that God is there. He meets up with us, and he helps us to be and do the kinds of things that he wants us to do. And perhaps above all, he wants us to engage with the people that he puts across our path. Well, for those of you who remember the Star Trek TV series, shall we then engage? Father, thank you for David and Goliath. And thank you that there is so much about this group of people that we can easily identify with. We easily identify with the Israelites, who were just so scared so much of the time, who so often forgot about you and the things that you had done in the past to bless them. We're like that, Father. Our memories are awful at times. And I pray that you would help us to take more strolls down memory lane to be reminded of your goodness to us in the past. And thank you for this lad, David, this man who, while others were unwilling to step out and to take your promises seriously, I pray that we all would be much more engaging for some of the reasons that he was engaging, and that over the next couple of weeks, that the people that you bring into our homes, some will be family, some will be friends, maybe there will be office parties, that you would give us the courage that we need to put ourselves out there and to self-identify as those who know you, and of course to live well and to do good as we have opportunity. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.